Welcome to Female Future, a podcast about female icons, trendsetters, and pioneers. Throughout history, women changed the world, and they continue to do so today, but too often we don't hear about it. Many women's stories go untold, their voices are unheard, and their impact is overlooked. This is a podcast exploring the achievements of women who have helped to shape society in arts, politics, science, and innovation. My name is Yvonne Eisenring. I am a Swiss writer and talk show host, and for this podcast series, I will talk to women from Switzerland, UK, and Israel. This episode is about Sophie Teuber-Arp, and my two guests both know a lot about the Swiss artist. I'm talking with Helen Kedek and Walburga Krupp. Walburga Krupp is a leading expert on the art and life of Sophie Teuber-Arp. She is the co-curator of the exhibitions about the artist at Kunstmuseum Basel, London Tate Modern and the MoMA in New York. From 1990 to 2012, she was also the curator of the Arp Verein. Helen Kedek is a South London-born composer. She collaborated with musicians, artists, and directors in both theatre and film on a diverse range of projects, and one of her latest projects was inspired by Sophie Teuber-Arp. We'll talk more about this very interesting work later, and I'm so excited that you're both here. Welcome to this episode.
Hello, nice to be here.
Thank you very much.
Well, first, I think we have to tell the listeners a bit more about the artist herself. She was born 1889, and she was one of the most important artists of the 20th century. And I could read a bio now, but you know her so much better than I do. Maybe you can name the biggest achievements and turning points of her career.
Yes, she was born, as you said, in 1889 in Davos, Switzerland, but raised in Togen, the eastern part of Switzerland, because her father died when she was two, and so the mother moved to her family who lived in the eastern part. And the mother was a multi-talented person. She was painting, drawing, knitting, a photographer, designer. She designed her own house that she built in Trogen, and so she was a role model for her youngest daughter. Sophie Teuber-Arp studied in Munich at the Debschitz School, one of the avant-garde schools at that time. There was co-education by the outbreak of World War I. She moved back to Switzerland. She went to Zurich, where she met her former husband, Hans Arp. And Hans Arp brought her in contact to the Dada movement in Zurich. She also started to make interior design. Famous was the Obed in Strasbourg she designed. And in 1929, she moved with her husband, Hans Arp, to Clamart, where she had built her own house. And for the next 10 years, she lived in the outskirts of Paris, being a well-known painter and sculptor and designer. She published an art magazine. And during the outbreak of World War II, they had to go to the south of France. And they decided to emigrate to the United States, but finally they decided to stay in Europe. She died in January 1943 by accident in the house of Binja and Max Bill in Zurich.
Was her work, her art, being overlooked for a long time?
The point was, it was at the very beginning, there have been monographic exhibitions on Sophie Teuber-Arp in the 50s and in the 60s. But then there was a time there nothing happened with her. She was seen as the wife of Hans Arp, maybe because he always asked to show her works when he was exhibited. And there was a kind of revival at the end of the 70s when the feminists start to bring women artists more to the attention of the public. And then slowly, step by step, she has shows, monographic shows all over the world. But it was never, I would like to say, like our show now, who has such a focus on the textile work. I think that was the audience was not prepared for that before.
Helen, you are a composer, and one of your latest projects was inspired by the Swiss artist. Why? What did interest you?
I think it came about really because I'd written a work before this work about Jean Arp, And it was inspired very much by his art and poetry. But through his poetry and writings, I realised how important Sophie was in his life, on his thinking and approach. But there was very little known about her. So I had Sophie Teubner up dancing silently in a very beautiful costume created by Swiss couturier Martina Trotman behind the ensemble. And I had the soprano singing poetry by Hans Arp. But I realised after completing that work that I'd been looking at her through Jean Arp's eyes as a dreamlike figure and hadn't really got to know her in her own right. And the things that I'd seen about her was that she used very few words, she was quite shy, and I was thinking, I bet that's not what she's really about. And what was quite amazing, I was asked to speak at a symposium, and one of the speakers at that symposium, Dr. Jill Fell, had just returned from Zurich, having looked at the letters that had been recently released, and I was just besides myself. I was jumping with excitement because I thought, here is my chance to get to know Sophie in her own right as a woman and as an artist. So I bought copies of all the letters and then began quite a slow process. Wahlberger has been amazing at every step in pointing me in the right direction when I needed to find specific research materials. You know, she tended to talk about her art with her husband. And so I realised that the thing that was really, really fascinating me was how they balance life and art. It was just incredible piecing all these things together and reading her anger and fury at manifestos, and her passion coming through in those letters, you know, showed me that she was absolutely a progressive modern woman. She had a hell of a lot to say, and I could completely understand how she inspired Jean Arp. And I was also fascinated by the fact that she's been celebrated on the 50 franc Swiss banknote, and yet on her death certificate, her occupation was noted as housewife, which made me furiously angry and determined to make her story well known. And despite her appearance on the banknote, the fact that she still isn't very well known, I just think is quite shocking. And I have to say that the retrospective at Tate Modern is beautiful. It's curated so beautifully. It's amazing to see an exhibition like that in so many mediums, all created by one woman.
Wahlberger, you shook your head when Helen said that she thought that she was shy, and you were like, no, that's not true. But how was she? How was she as an artist, as a wife, as a woman?
Well, she was absolutely not shy. You see the image of a shy person standing in the background, that is an image that has been, let's say, built by Hans Arp after her death, you see. And that is correct what Helen said. We had, until we know the letters, we had no words by Sophie Teuber Arp. It was always Hans Arp who was telling about her, or in the memoirs on Dada. And Arp, yes, he loved her so much and he wanted to tell nice things, you see. But if you see the letters, and even starting in the time when she is in Munich, most of the correspondence we yet published is to her old sister. And then there are some times she wrote a lot of letters to Hans Arp as well. And luckily, we could include in our volume letters by Arp to Sophie Teuber Arp, so that you can see the exchange between the couple.
And how was that? How was the exchange?
Well, it's funny. You see, it's from the time when they're both living in Paris and they function as a very good team, I think, in these years. It's and she was, in my eyes, raised in Eastern Switzerland. She is always a little bit bourgeois, you see. And at that time, she wasn't a feminist, you see. She was very modern, absolutely modern. She was a very elegant woman, and she was self-confident and she knew what she wanted, but she was not in that way a feminist. And so as a couple, if you see the men and women, then it was, yes, she did more, I have to say, like, than he did, because she did the household, for example. But it's, you can see in Paris, it's that she is working more in Clamart, doing the correspondence, organizing, and Arp is going to Paris. And it's not only because she wanted to stay in the background, and that's it's as well because they hadn't so much money. So that sometimes there was only money enough that one could go to Paris, you see. So, and Arp was dealing with the galleries or with the museums. That was his part. And she was doing correspondence, or she was helping him with his works. For example, making the drawings for her sculptures, for our reliefs for the carpenters. I think they functioned very well as a couple. It was really a team in that years.
But he was the decision maker.
No, they did it together, you see.
Helen, you're an artist yourself. Is she kind of a role model for you, or how does she inspire you in your approach as an artist?
I think what is so inspiring about her is that she could turn her hand to so many mediums and not bat an eyelid. And I think sometimes today, female artists are more pigeonholed into needing to establish themselves very much in one career and not supported to spread themselves across many careers. And I think Sophie's just a real visionary in that, like Wahlberger said, inspired by her mother. So I think that there was so much to take from her life. You know, she faced discrimination early on because she had wanted to study with a particular tutor at college, and because she was female, she wasn't allowed to. As well as the fact that she was supporting art, you know, she had to look after his clothes, and during the war, she was the one that had to find food while he continued with his art, and all the practical sides that often are left to a female to run a household, even when you're both artists, a lot of that can still get left to the female in the relationship. So there were a lot of parallels with life today. And I think for me as an artist, looking at their relationship, the fact that she had really wanted to have children, and art absolutely didn't want them to have children. And that was a source of conflict. And she had to come to terms with that. I've had children, I have to say, but there was a time when I thought that I would only be able to have one child. And so I really related to her feelings of sadness at not being able to become a mother.
Do you think her career would be different now if she lived now as a female artist?
I think nowadays it's easier in a way than it was at that time. I think we really have to accept that there have been many restrictions at that time. Today, you can more easily say, oh no, I won't make for her. She had really a classical role as a wife, you see, in this partnership.
Did I see that you shake your head, Helen? Would you agree? is it easier?
I think maybe marginally.
No.
Maybe marginally. But if you were to go into any big gallery in the UK, it may be different in around the world. But there are very few artworks by females hanging on the walls. I mean, which is why there's been this group, Guerrilla Girls, campaigning saying, do you need to be a nude to appear in a painting in a big gallery? I don't know if it's the same in the literary world. I think female authors get a lot of recognition, but I think in art and music, in classical music I'm talking about, contemporary classical music, it is still a real fight to be given fair commissioning and fair performance opportunities.
Would you agree, Wahlberger?
Well, I think in the art world, the system is a little bit different today. At her time, for example, abstract art in Paris had no galleries, you see. She was a member of groups like Cercle et Carré, Abstraction Création, and these groups have been founded just to support themselves. They had rent galleries to show their works. It was really hard. And in Paris, there haven't been collectors for abstract art. The Alps sold to Swiss collectors, you see. And so the system, I think, is today different. But you are right that it's for females still, female artists still difficult in the art market.
In the time of Piet Mondrian, Marlo Moss, an English abstract contemporary artist, had a studio down the road to Piet Mondrian, and she was making discoveries that I think got attributed to Mondrian, and then people said that she copied him, and yet she was at the forefront with him. And I think the very fact, going back to classical music, if you were to go to a concert of the history of Western music, I can guarantee you it would all be male composers. Where are the females in all this? They were writing. And we need to bring those women out of obscurity and put them on the concert stage so that young girls and new generations coming up can see that they're part of a heritage.
But you see, that was when she started her career, she was an applied artist, you see, and that was recognized by the Dadaists because they wanted to destroy the classical idea of art, that what you saw in a bourgeois household, the painting, the oil painting. So when she met Arup, he was exhibiting textiles. So that was their direct connection, you see. So for him, it was very, very interesting. And not only for him, and the Dadaists, for example, loved her marionettes for that play, you see. Mm-hmm. So I think she could be a perfectly role model in doing so many different things, you see. Being, for example, when she started being a sculptor in the 30s, she used the same technique as for the marionettes and for the applied art wooden boxes she did. So for her, there have been no boundaries between the different kinds of art, you see. Just when I imagine that when in 1939, just closely before the war, she exhibited in a gallery, and beside her paintings and drawings, she showed textiles. So it was all was one art for her.
Mm-hmm. I really love that, Walburga, you still seem to be so fascinated by her, and you kind of dedicated your career to her career. When I read, like, you work with her work for such a long time, what is it that it's so inspiring for you?
I think that she is working in so many different ways, you see, and that it's and that she has no boundaries in her art, and that she's always open-minded, always interested, and what she did very good, you see, and in a very exquisite way, which I like very much. And for me, it's fascinating to see that she said, "Oh, I will show textiles, with paintings, with everything." That is really amazing. And how she is using color, you see. I'm so fascinated by her use of color. That's great, absolutely great.
Is there someone similar or someone as talented you came across? Someone we can, like, compare her to?
Well, it's... I think Sonia Delaunay is, in a way, similar, can be compared with Sophie Teuber-Arp, even at some time in their lives they wouldn't have loved that, if I would say that. But she started, for example, as a painter, and when she got a baby, she started to make more applied arts. And during World War I, she was with her family in Spain on vacation. And they remained in Spain and Portugal, and she was earning the money for the family with applied arts. And then she made a career in Paris in the 20s with her boutique Sonia, which she was really a fashion maker, great fashion maker. There's a beautiful photograph showing Sonia Delaunay and Sophie Teuber-Arp at the beach. I like that very much, in the dresses by Sonia Delaunay.
When I listen to you both, especially to all of what she did, I get the feeling she was super restless. She worked all the time. Or did she ever, like, take a rest or, like, relax? Or, I don't know, she just worked.
Yes, she worked mainly. If you see the letters to her sister when she is in Clamart, she is even talking about her garden. She had a garden that she organized, like her art, you see, in squares with flowers, but as well with the vegetable. The only time when she made vacation was really when she made summer vacations. For example, once they went with friends to Cadaqués, and they stood there for nearly 3 months, I think, because the tickets were very cheap. So she went in July and coming back in October. And she loved that very much. But that was a time when they were working as well. And working means drawing for her, mostly drawing.
And I think actually there were a couple of things that I came across that were just so, so sweet, where when they were leaving Clamart to escape Paris, she picked flowers from her garden to give them to her neighbour so that they wouldn't die, which was really, really poignant and sweet. And, there was something else where she was saying that she liked entertaining friends, but she would long for them to go so she could get back to her artwork. And I thought that was, again, showing her restlessness and her desire to be creating all the time.
What do you both think would have been her next step in her life if she didn't die so young? She died really young. She was only 54, right?
Days before her 54th birthday. Yeah. Well, it's hard to say, you know, because there was still war, and they would have to go back to France. And I think as long as the war would be there, she would have gone on drawing with drawings. But after the war, maybe with paintings and more sculptures. Yes.
I also think that she would have published more of her plastique magazines, because she was trying to bring artists together from Europe and America. And I think, you know, that's something that I really admired in her, you know, that she talked to her students about it's unkind to criticise artists, there must be solidarity. And she signed petitions for the release of prisoners during the war, and she worked with the British Red Cross to help orphaned children when their parents were arrested. You know, she was such a giving, kind, thoughtful, intelligent woman, you know, a real game changer on so many levels. So I think her architecture and editing and, yeah, it would have been amazing to see what she would have done next. I mean, she could have been trying even more mediums. Who knows? She was just no stopping her, really.
What is your next project, Helen? Is it also going to be inspired by her, or by someone completely different?
I've just actually completed a commission for an ensemble in Belgium called We Are Here, inspired by a protest on a banner carried by some of the brave women of Afghanistan. And it is this idea that, you know, we can't be suppressed and pushed down. You know, we are here, we are females, you know, we have equal rights, we should be treated the same. And that's being recorded in the spring, and I'm looking to find funding partners and opera companies to help me bring the full opera to the stage, because I had extracts from Sophie shared at the Tete a Tete Festival in London in August. But the full work is over 2 hours long, and I would so, so love to be able to bring it to the stage, have costumes and sets inspired by Sophie's artworks, and work with opera companies. And that's my dream, to be able to take it to places around the world like New York, France, Germany and Switzerland, where she's had some recognition, but also take the work to places around the world where she's not known, to keep spreading news of this incredible artist. I'd love to have the opportunity to do that.
I would love to talk more about her. I hope we didn't forget to mention anything. That would be my last question. Where can people learn more about Sophie Tauber-Arp, and how can they reach out to both of you as well?
Well, they first of all, at the moment, people could go to the exhibition at MoMA. And then
until when?
It's until March 22. Mm-hmm. And then they could read the books, the correspondence, so they have her voice directly. And for the English-speaking audience, I also published with the Fondazione Margaret Arp in Locarno, correspondence of Sophie Tauber-Arp with her collectors in Basel, Annie and Oskar Müller-Riedmann, which is quite interesting because there she is talking much more about Arp than with her sister. Mm-hmm. And this is available as well in English, German and Italian.
How can they reach out to you, Helen? How can people get to know more about you?
I have a website, which is www.helencaddick.com. And you can also view the extracts from the opera at the Tete a Tete website online. And I also have my music available on Bandcamp.
I would definitely like want to learn more about her and her work, and I hope I can see the opera one day if it comes to Zurich, maybe. And I hope I can go to New York and see the exhibition at MoMA. That would be really amazing. Until March, I hope I can do that. Yeah, thank you both so much. It was such an interesting talk, and I'm glad I got to know more about Sophie Togarap.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
This was another episode of Female Future. If you want to discover more female icons, trendsetters, and pioneers, join us again for another talk with two outstanding women. Female Future is part of Women of Switzerland, which is a collaboration of the Embassy of Switzerland in the UK and the Embassy of Switzerland in Israel. This is a podcast highlighting the 50th anniversary of female suffrage in Switzerland. If you want to learn more, visit wakeupnow.ch.